This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And to your point, saying that they look miserable most of the time, how often do we see these guys? We only see them for an hour and a half, 2 hours, maybe
every couple
times
of days. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't. I used to say this when people went over their skis about what a great person or the glowing references to people's character of celebrities. You don't know these guys.
Exactly. Relax.
But that's just as true if you're talking about their happiness. You don't know Kevin Durant. When you say Kevin Durant's miserable, all you really know is he made a frowny face for a couple hours.
He's wearing a White Sox hat.
I'm a pretty happy guy, and I make frowny faces for at least 2 hours a day. At least. And I love my life.
Did you see The Athletic did a piece on the White Sox hat and what that means when he rolls it out at a press conference? It's pretty funny.
I do just hope that we hyperanalyze his positive moments as well.
So I say that
knowing we won't, but this is my point. We're going to hyperanalyze everything that might possibly reflect negatively or suggest that he's upset. But we're not going to pay that much attention to the stuff that is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Help me out with this. Adam Silver seems like the type of commissioner that when he knows he's going to be speaking into a bank of microphones, he's got a very specific purpose for saying what he's saying and how he's saying it. For the life of me, I can't understand what the potential positive could have been for Silver publicly saying a lot of our stars look miserable. I don't get that.
I think he's saying that. I think he's trying to respond to the optics of Kyrie and KD seeming dissatisfied and Anthony Davis seeming dissatisfied and LeBron seeming unhappy with his decisions. I think he's just trying to. And 510 Texter says having money doesn't equal happiness. And of course you're right. And I didn't mean to suggest that. I don't know if Kevin Durant's happy. That's my whole point. Maybe he is miserable. I'm just saying the fact that you see him for a total of 10 hours a week and perceive him to be unhappy doesn't actually really mean that much. That's what I'm saying. Let's go to Paul in Oakland. What's up, Paul?
Yeah, Matt, I've got two things. First of all, I agree with you in terms of the flow of the game. The Warriors, when they were playing without KD, were constantly moving. In fact, they were one of the fastest moving teams that I had ever seen in my life. And as soon as KD came in and he became adjusted to that style of play and he bought in to the system, then the team still flowed. My feeling is that, number one, I don't think he's buying into the system right now. I think he's being sarcastic about the coaches. I think he's dealing with the press in a negative way. And I think the second point I want to make is I think that one thing that people overlook is that the last two games, without KD starting the game, the defense intensified, and it's partially because of, obviously, it needs focus. But secondly, the team had four great defensive players playing, which cover for Steph, who plays as hard as he can on defense. But when KD's in there, KD is not a good defensive player. He's only good when he can block a shot or make that heroic play.
Yeah, that's wrong, Paul. I appreciate the call, but the last part's incorrect. KD's a great defensive player when he wants to be. Great. A great defensive player. Every bit, very close to as good as Andre Iguodala.
Last year, midway through the year, now I thought it was a little bit overboard, but there was rumblings that he may be a defensive player of the year candidate. I thought that was a little overboard, but
he's certainly a guy.
Didn't come out of nowhere.
Kevin Durant is a guy who can reasonably make an all defensive team,
right?
And yeah, some of that is help defense and blocks, but he can also play one-on-one defense against wings. He absolutely can.
The key is when like you said, when he wants to be, he can dominant defensive player.
And even that, I feel like that's being a little unfair to him because he's got a lot to do. And he doesn't always do the defense. And in particular, when it was no Steph, no Draymond,
I was just going to say, that's
and
when
he
his
and
defense...
Clay had to carry all the offense, his defense did slip a little bit. And I think to the earlier texter's point, I'm not sure the team ever fully recovered from the Steph and Draymond injuries until last night. And obviously one game doesn't do anything, but we'll see. If it keeps looking like this, vibe-wise, flow-wise, ball movement-wise, as Kevin comes back, then I think we're good to go. I think they're probably good to go anyway. But in terms of playing their best, this is what it should look like. And you can bring Kevin Durant into this style. They've done it. We've seen it.
And Ron Adams, who goes way back to they were together when KD was a youngster, he basically confirmed, look, when he was with the Thunder, just what you were saying, Matt, is that they were asking so much of him. And same goes for Russell Westbrook. They had to expend so much energy on the offensive end of the floor. And one of the things that KD said during his introductory press conference, which it got me so excited because he was excited about it. He said, I'm really looking forward to seeing what I can do defensively with this team, with this group. He knew that they played great defense. He felt capable of playing great defense as well, but he seemed to be saying, I just haven't had, you know, I've got too much to do when it's just me and Russ. Now we've got a bunch of all-stars. Now you're going to see me focus on D. And all of a sudden, people are starting talking about Defensive Player of the Year award because he was getting after it.
816 texter following up saying he does seem unhappy at most of his post-game reports, so all I'm saying is the media will probably stop asking over and over about some of this stuff if he didn't seem so upset about it. And that's where I do kind of agree. Now look.
Dumb that down for me because I didn't get it. What's he saying?
You're going to get questions no matter what. It's part of the job. But what he's saying is if you make it less of a thing, it might be less of a thing. What he's saying is if Kevin Durant didn't have some outsized negative reactions to some of these questions, if he went with no comment or I'm not going to address that until the end of the season, keep it moving, maybe he'd have less attention and the questions would come less frequently. And I think that might be true. Or at the very least, the whole experience would be less painful if he just brushed it off instead of clapping back. But also, he's a man. That's his choice. If he wants to clap back, he's certainly well within his rights. Here, I think, is a great metaphor for people to think about, though, in terms of what does this really tell you about Kevin Durant's personality or personal happiness? John in the 510 says, what if the only thing people knew about you was interviews you gave during the most stressful part of your day? Huh. You probably would not reflect your best self.
Great point.
And I think that's part of what's happening with Kevin Durant here is it's just everyone's judging his overall personal happiness based on a few moments that may not be that reflective of it.
We don't know Kevin Durant.
You know who might know? Mark Medina.
Mark Medina. He certainly knows Kevin Durant.
He covers the team for the Bay Area News Group and San Jose Mercury News, and he will join us next. Matt Kolsky, Michael Urban, talking Warriors on the home of the Warriors, 95.7 The Game.
Now back to Kolsky and Urban.
I'm Matt Kolsky. He's Michael Urban. James is our board op. James, does Gabe have pictures of you or what? What's happening here? Is that because I know it's not your? I know this is not your music.
Is Gabe oiling himself up in there?
He did go sleeveless today.
He did. He's showing the guns.
The gun show is in full effect.
Oh no! Don't do that. Ian Clark. He's rocking Ian Clark. I've
got to respect an Ian Clark jersey. It's a fact. You also got to respect Mark Medina. Does a fantastic job covering the Warriors for the San Jose Mercury News and Bay Area News Group. And he joins us now. And Mark, I guess we're just punching the ticket straight to the NBA Finals now because the Warriors have showed us they can take care of Denver, Houston, and OKC, right?
Basically, and it's amazing how much things have changed ever since earlier, exactly a week ago, when they lost to the Phoenix Suns, the worst team in the Western Conference. And, you know, I think there's a lot of angst of, not that suddenly the Warriors' title fortunes are in jeopardy, but, like, what's their deal? Why can't they muster up more than a one win and not get a two-game winning streak since the All-Star break, and how they get consistency? But I think what you've seen in this road trip are a few things. One, the Warriors are obviously fine and they're talented. They can respond well because they have all that equity. But they seem to be at their best when they're on the road and against really good teams. And Houston, Oklahoma City are one of them. And that's been a pattern all this year. When you look at the marquee wins that they've gotten this season, most of them are on the road, whether it's against Milwaukee or Boston or Philadelphia. And when you compare that to Oracle Arena, those three teams beat the Warriors and several others. So it kind of highlights that the Warriors are bored with a lot of things, but this one thing gets them going because, you know, it adds some excitement otherwise to a pretty boring season for them.
Hey, Mark, after they appeared to get right with that blowout win over the Nuggets, then they suffer the latest worst loss ever. And I said to myself, I'm not going to ever get sucked back in again by a good game or two and say that they've solved it. Well, here I am, Mark. I got sucked back in. They're fixed. Best team ever.
You're falling for it.
Again.
Here's the thing, though. I think it'll sustain, not forever like the rest of the season, but I think in this road trip it will, because San Antonio, they've won 8 in a row. You know, even though they're not on that upper echelon of teams, of ones that could make a deep playoff push, the Warriors, as with all the other 29 teams in the NBA, they have a lot of respect for Spurs because of all the familiar reasons with Pop being there and that they're competitive, you know, even for the fact that they've lost that big three with Tim Duncan and Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. It's something to be said that they're not going through a rebuilding season. So I think at least for Monday's game, they'll be able to hold the fort down. But what will be interesting is, what do they do back-to-back in Minnesota? They're not necessarily a good team. It's a back-to-back. Maybe some guys are tired. Maybe they'd rest some guys. That's where maybe they'll start showing what they're like against Phoenix the other day.
Warriors beat writer Mark Medina joining us on 95.7 The Game. And obviously, I don't know how great the Houston win was, to be totally honest, but two wins without Kevin Durant, two games where there seems to be a good flow, a good vibe around the team without Kevin Durant. So naturally, much of our time today has involved taking calls and texts from people who think the Warriors are better without Kevin Durant. I don't think that's true. I don't think many reasonable people think that's true. But I do think this question is relevant. And the question is, the way the ball has moved without KD has been different. And clearly the best version of the Warriors is when they play that style with Kevin Durant. So if it is tomorrow that KD comes back, do you believe he'll seamlessly fit into what they've been doing? Or in a way, in terms of style of play, is it potentially creating a problem?
Yeah, that's always been the ultimate push-pull ever since he's been with the organization. Because if you look at a big picture, it's been fine. You know, obviously they've won three consecutive championships. He got two finals MVPs. But when you're looking at it game to game, maybe even sometimes quarter to quarter, there I think is a push-pull of when is it good to do strength in numbers and pass the ball versus go isolation and get KD the ball. And here's the thing that adds some, you know, complications to that question is, I don't think the ball movement is always the answer. I don't think the ISO heavy play is always the answer. I think it's very circumstantial, and that's what sometimes I think makes it difficult for all parties to exactly figure out. Now, at the end of the day, they've been able to figure it out because these guys are really good at basketball, right? With Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, and now DeMarcus Cousins. But especially this season, I've sensed that there isn't always an exact feeling game to game on what's the best approach to do. So to answer the question tomorrow, who knows? But I think it is a rough comparison because of the obvious talent discrepancy. But this Warriors play in the past two games without Kevin Durant and how they've adjusted sometimes reminded me of when I was covering the Lakers and Kobe Bryant would be out for a few games. And all of a sudden you don't have Kobe shooting a lot and everyone's involved and they're playing well. And I think what that illustrated as they know that they kind of have to do all the little things that they wouldn't do if Kobe was on the floor. And the same thing applies to Kevin, and the ball is moving because they can't just dump it in. But the returns on that can only go so far. Like that looks really good in maybe a 2-3-4 game segment. But after a while, if he's out for longer than that, it starts becoming very apparent. Yeah, we could really use a ball dominant scorer that can bail us out at tough times. But in Kevin's case, obviously he has a lot of all-star talented teammates that could make up for that. But also, you know, Steve Kerr was saying that he expects Kevin Durant to play in Monday's game in San Antonio. So they won't have kind of those long-term consequences of him being out.
Hey, Mark, DeMarcus Cousins played exceptionally well against the Rockets. Clint Capella, one of the storylines of the season in terms of who's a threat to the Warriors was a big part of the reason that the Rockets might be the biggest threat is because Clint Capella presents problems that other big men don't present. Do you buy into that? Do you think DeMarcus was extra motivated? Think he's hearing that and wanted to address it by dominating against the Rockets, or he's just trying to have a good game every game? It doesn't matter who they're playing.
Yeah, see, in the limited time I'm covering DeMarcus, he sounds very apathetic to all the criticism, but I think maybe he doesn't get consumed with the public perception and reading everything, but I think the criticism did bother him. There is a reason why the Warriors, I think, made it a point to defend him, A, to make him feel like we're in this together. But I think also, in fairness, it wasn't just on DeMarcus. Like, there's no question that, you know, DeMarcus is not the same player that he was, you know, pre-Achilles injury, and defense wasn't necessarily always a strong suit to begin with. But when you're looking at the numbers with the Warriors defense, like, they've been middle of the pack throughout the entire season, you know, whether it was because Draymond was out or when he was back, even, you know, before Boogie's return. What is interesting is the first six games when they went 5-1, when DeMarcus came back, their defensive numbers were really good. And so I think that the story there is their defensive success has more to do with how the team is playing as a whole and hustling. And if they do that, they can minimize some of the casualties that DeMarcus brings on defense, you know, like teams trying to, you know, isolate him and get him on switches and pick and roll. And I think when you're looking at these three specific games with Denver, with Nikola Jokic, and Houston with Clint Capella, and then, you know, Oklahoma City against Steven Adams, I think it's been a combination of those guys match up well against DeMarcus. Like, they're big guys, so it's not like they are these small athletic guys that he has to chase around. But also, that has coincided with the Warriors doing two things. Their effort as a team has been substantially a lot better. And also, they're featuring DeMarcus in more positions to succeed, where he obviously is still with the starting lineup, but they're also staggering him and featuring him more in the second unit, where they can take advantage of his offense with his scoring and passing while also minimizing some of the defensive shortcomings. So it's been a matter of all parties adjusting so that they're, you know, showing more of what DeMarcus can do as opposed to what he can't do.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And to your defensive point, Mark, and we're talking with Mark Medina, Warriors beat writer for the San Jose Mercury News. Isn't last night, in a lot of ways, sort of the perfect example of that? Where, what changed last night? DeMarcus is still out there, and Steven Adams is a big athletic dude that you'd think could give him problems, and he did. It had 7 offensive rebounds in the game, but the Warriors had a tremendous overall defensive performance, and if they do that, DeMarcus is not so bad he's going to ruin everything. He'll hold his weight to a certain degree, and if you defend Russell Westbrook and Paul George really well, you're going to kill that team.
Without a doubt. I mean, I think Draymond was playing the defense that he normally plays and was helping with all the switching and pointing out rotations and then getting rebounds. But, you know, I think Clay was the biggest guy because he was the primary defender on Russell Westbrook. He went 2-16 from the field, 0-7 from three. And I think as a team, the Warriors played the best defense on Russell because they knew when it was time to play defense on him and they knew when it was time not to. Basically, for Clay, he did not want him to get down to the basket to get open looks, not fall for pump fakes. But when you look at a lot of the threes that he took, they left him wide open for a reason because he's not a good three-point shooter. So the Warriors played the percentages with that, but not only were they leaving him open and playing the odds with that, they were also using that time to do better things defensively. Like there's some times where Clay would leave Russ open from the perimeter, but that's also because he wanted to be in a position to be able to close out on a better shooter or be in the paint so he could help on a double team if he dumped it to a big guy or to chase a rebound off a presumed miss. So the Warriors, I think defensively as a whole, have been, you know, hustling a lot more, but they've also been a lot smarter with how they've been doing things. I think with Russell, that epitomizes that.
Hey, Mark, DeMarcus Cousins has always been known as a pretty good passer, especially out of the block on the double team. It seems to me, and you're paying closer attention than I am, certainly, but when KD is on the floor, if the offense runs through DeMarcus, it's usually at the top of the key. When KD is not available, it seems more often they run the offense through him on the low block, which is where I think they're more effective. Are you seeing that same thing?
Yeah, and that's, you know, when we're talking about DeMarcus's improvement, like there's no doubt that because Kevin Durant's been out, that's created more opportunities for DeMarcus to be the guy in the post. And then the second kind of, you know, unintended benefit with this is with Durant being out, you know, Steve Kerr has decided to start Andre Iguodala, which is a sign that he's trying to gear for the playoffs because Andre is more reliable than someone like Alphonso McKinney or Damian Lee starting that position at the wing. But that's also led him to make changes with the second unit. There were a lot of times that DeMarcus and Draymond Green were playing together on that staggered second and fourth quarter lineup, and they kind of got in each other's way. So by separating those two, I think there's a lot more space for both of those guys to navigate. So I think to the earlier point that Matt was making, like when Kevin comes back, it will be interesting to see, you know, do they just completely go back to what Kevin was doing and what the team was doing pre-injury, or do they accommodate his obvious starting role and kind of keep some of those other things, like maybe Draymond and DeMarcus not playing together with the reserves? It's going to be an interesting puzzle for Steve to figure out there.
And of course, you can all follow Mark Medina for all of the latest on all of it at @MarkG_Medina. He is a Warriors beat writer for the Bay Area News Group and San Jose Mercury News. Before we let you go, we just saw them beat arguably the two biggest Western Conference challengers. Who for you is the biggest threat to the Warriors if the playoffs started today?
Well, I don't think there's any threat, like assuming they're healthy, they're going to win the title.
Yeah.
But if I were to break it down in the West, as far as like a Western Conference finals opponent, I would say it's Houston, just because they're really good at getting to the foul line. They can hit a lot of threes. James Harden scores a lot. And I think, you know, in fairness to the math that Daryl Morey always talks about, at least for a few games, the math would play on their side. But I think the Warriors, especially in the playoffs, have a much better philosophy where it's not just going to hinge on James Harden, who obviously has a history of kind of wearing out in the postseason. They have so many different options, number one. And number two, you looked at what happened this week where the Rockets missed 33s. I'm not going to say that the Rockets are always going to be missing that many or missing 27 in a row to help the Warriors win a game seven like last year. But there's a lot of times there might be some off nights, and the Warriors know that that's a strong possibility, and so they're just going to be chasing long rebounds. So I think that the Warriors have a lot better counters to the inevitable adjustments that come in a playoff series. As far as like first round opponents, you know, obviously it's not like the Warriors are going to be losing the first round, but if I'm looking at what's the most ideal, I think in order it would be San Antonio and then the Clippers and then the Jazz. Again, none of these teams, assuming the Warriors are healthy, are going to beat them.
No, I'm with you, though. You'd like to avoid Utah if you can.
Mm-hmm. I think the Jazz could at least wear them out a little bit, make it challenging, make it tiring, and you don't want kind of the law of attrition to then carry over to the next round, whoever they face. But, yeah, I don't want to say that the Thunder are not going to be challenging, like the odds of Russ and Paul George having those kind of numbers on a game-to-game basis are unlikely, and they will bring intensity. But I just don't see them providing any serious threat to the Warriors of, you know, making it at least competitive.
Hey, Mark, you said something so matter-of-factly that I need to follow up on it because I know where you were before you started covering the Warriors. You were covering the Lakers. You referenced Kobe Bryant. Great teams down there, a couple of them that you covered. Were you ever at this point in a season covering the Lakers and telling people, as long as they're healthy, they're going to win, and I have absolutely no doubt about it? That seems like it might be a pretty rare feeling for a basketball writer.
Yeah, I mean, the time I was covering the Lakers is when they're really bad, so I could never really say that.
You didn't get the good Kobe Shaq Lakers.
No, I'm not that old. I'm like
a young man, Irv. For God's sakes, man.
I just, every time I hear Kobe, I think Shaq's with him. They're married together forever.
I was in middle school then. I wasn't qualified to write for a
Could have at least asked him about Pau Gasol. Kobe Shaq Lakers. Good God.
How did this turn into I'm a crazy old man yelling at kids on my lawn?
Because you got crazy.
Get off my lawn, Medina.
Okay. I do got to clarify, though. I did start not as a beat writer, but helping out with Lakers coverage in the middle of the 2009-10 season. So they did win the title there.
Yeah.
They had a lot of good talent. It didn't seem as inevitable as the Warriors because, you know, no one can compete with having five All-Stars in their starting lineup. But I think specifically that season, there was always a feeling of as long as they stay healthy, they'll be fine. But there was a lot more unknowns with both the time they did defend the championship in 2010 and not in 2011 because they were a much older group. Like, they dealt with injuries throughout the season, whether it was Kobe Bryant, you know, Pau Gasol, Lamar Odom, Derek Fisher. Like, I don't want to say that they were, you know, being treated with patchwork every day, but they were all in their early to mid-30s, where with the Warriors, you know, Steph just turned 31, Kevin Durant's 30, but, you know, Draymond's 29, Klay's 28. DeMarcus is obviously coming back from an Achilles, but he's not facing major injuries right now, and he's 29, I believe. So, like, they're in a much different stage of this window by about 3 or 4 years.
Mark Medina, ladies and gentlemen. Follow him at @MarkG_Medina. Read his work in the Bay Area News Group.
Bang.
And the San Jose Mercury News. Thanks, man. We always appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark.
All right. Thank you, man. And, Michael, I didn't mean to yell at you. I was just making a joke.
He deserved it, Mark.
We'll take this offline,
Mark.
He
deserved it.
All right, brother. Take care, man.
All right.
Seriously, was he around during the Kobe Shaq Lakers? For God's sake.
Was it that long ago?
It was the early 2000s. 01, 02, 03? Is that right? 2000, 2001, 2002, something like that?
Well, you know a little bit about my personal history.
16 years
ago. Do I
ago?
Get a pass because I blacked out 6 years? 6 of those years I blacked out, basically.
It's been 16. It's been 16. Does Mark Medina look like a guy who was on the Lakers beat for 16 years before he switched over to the Warriors?
I thought maybe he was Portuguese. Portuguese people have perfect skin. They all look younger than they are.
No, the voice is ageless, but Mark Medina is a young man. A young man. Probably too young to get the reference I'm about to force on everyone. Per a texter. We had a texter suggest this. And I'm very excited about it. Do we have what we need? I don't understand what you're saying.
Is it the first text that I'm looking at here?
No, it is not. So a texter, we were talking about Kevin Durant's approach to press conferences and how, and I actually have less of a problem with it than most.
The White Sox lid.
Whatever. But here's the thing. I don't care if he wants to yell at guys, God bless. I just think he could make it easier on himself because he doesn't seem to love it. And I think he could, by making less of a thing of it, it might be less of a thing.
It's like Draymond with the refs.
Right? So what do you, how do you do that? And luckily, thanks to a 408 texter, we have just the man to teach Kevin Durant how to handle pressers.
Well, you got something to write with? Good. It's time to work on your interviews.
My interviews? What do I got to do?
You're going to have to learn your cliches. You're going to have to study them. You're going to have to know them. They're your friends. Write this down. We got to play them one day at a time.
Got to play. It's pretty boring.
Of course it's boring. That's the point. Write it down.
It's Mark Mulder.
Of course it's boring. That's the point.
Right.
It's an option. That's all I'm saying. If Kevin Durant prefers to yell at Ethan Sherwood Strauss, if that is what gets his juices going, I'm fine with it. Ethan's fine with it.
He told him to grow up.
Seriously, though, Ethan's not angry. Now, he might prefer not to be scolded, but
grow up.
That was cold. But
wow.
Yeah, you grow up.
You guys are on fire back there.
And to
that
be clear,
is good producing.
Ethan doesn't deserve it, but he understands it. Ethan will shed no tears over this. Everyone's fine. So if he wants to do that,
I thank Ethan for this.
Then fine. I'm just saying, if it is bothering him, if the added attention, the added criticism, if he doesn't like it, which is what it seems like, cliches are a nice answer. And people would criticize it differently, but not nearly as harshly. And it wouldn't be the same. It would be like, oh, well, he decided to be boring. And by the way, it's not like Kevin Durant doesn't know this. He did it for 8 years in Oklahoma City. Take it one day at a time. Everything's fine.
Do you think they'd back off him if he did that?
How about this?
It's all good.
That was a year ago. I would they all back off? Maybe not. Maybe not at first. But how many times?
It's all good.
Oh, yeah? Well, but what about this?
It's all good.
Okay, but it looked like you made a sour face.
It's all good.
All right, I guess I'm not getting anything here. I'm going to a different locker.
Right.
That's what would happen.
That was
eventually, that's what would happen.
I think I've told you this. That was Mark Mulder's whole approach to interviews. He said,
if
I'm a good interview, you're going to be at my locker every day.
Exactly.
So exactly. I'm bad on purpose.
Ichiro pretended not to speak English for 20 years.
Yep.
Like, you really think he's best friends with his whole roster? He probably speaks English and Spanish, frankly. You really think
he does? Yeah. He does speak both.
That dude just doesn't want to talk to you.
Yeah.
So, Kevin Durant, he doesn't have the 415 texter. It's all about that action, boss. Same thing. Did people criticize Marshawn? Kind of, to a certain degree. But at a certain point, we all just laughed and moved on.
Yeah, it was entertaining as much as anything.
I never criticized him. He was incredible.
Skittles.
Yeah. It became... See...
It was fun.
If you're a guy who brushes off the media in a cliched but kind of cute way, people like that.
Uh-huh.
You become an endearing character. If you brush off the media angrily, people start worrying about your emotional state, which it may not be fair, but it is facts. And so if Kevin Durant prefers less people commenting on his emotional state, a good way to get around that would just be to give very boring, cliched answers to questions.
I want him to start saying I'm all about that action, boss. That'd be great.
About that action, boss.
Pay homage to another Oakland hero.
Or I'm just here so I don't get fined. Speaking of football, we're right in the heart of football free agency. We're a little over 30 minutes from welcoming Robert Mays of The Ringer and The Ringer NFL show into the program.
I thought you were going Alliance reference on me right there. We're in the middle of football season.
Come on. We're in the middle of the football offseason, part of which includes other dudes playing football to try to get noticed by the real league. And we will talk about that real league coming up next. The 49ers have been active in a reserved way. The Raiders have been active in an unreserved way. And there's still moves to be made, plus a draft coming up. How are you feeling about your Bay Area football offseason so far? 888-957-9570 is our phone number. The Chilton Auto Body text line, 95795. Niners have spent a lot of money. Maybe not the names you expected, but they are signing guys. Raiders got a bunch of names you probably never expected, but they can play football. How are you feeling, Bay Area football fan? I'm Matt Kolsky. He's Michael Urban. Back in a few on 95.7 The Game.
Now back to 95.7 The Game.
That's a mean picking.
No, we shouldn't. We obviously, the lesson to learn here is don't talk about the rejoin music because Gabe will try to make it more ridiculous the next time.
Yes, and he'll succeed.
We are back. I'm Matt Kolsky. He is Michael Urban.
Hi.
And bad news, just coming across. We will not have Robert Mays. Robert reached out to us. And look, ordinarily when a guest blows us off, we don't tell you about it. But in this particular case, it was not a regular blow-off. We got word from Mr. Mays that his puppy is sick and he has got to go to the veterinarian, and nothing is more important than taking care of your canine child.
Priorities, man.
Well, I mean, I guess if you have a real child, that would be more important. But, you know, for me, the only child I've got at the moment is a puppy. He's not a puppy anymore. He's old. He's 13. And I'm intimately acquainted with the Sunday veterinarian emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So we wish Robert and his pup the best. And hopefully we will have a new Niners guest for you shortly. But in the meantime, I want to know how Niners fans are feeling about free agency. This was, we all talked about this being the biggest offseason for the Shanahan-Lynch regime, a sort of make-or-break offseason. Well, I heard David Lombardi say they've spent about $53 million so far. Was that right, James?
What did they have to start with, 66?
Yeah, and I don't know. He worked that out. There were some estimates in there. But ultimately, they've spent, if not all, a very good portion of their money. Are you satisfied with the way they've spent it? And if not, what's your biggest unfulfilled desire for the Niners? What was the vacancy that you were like, they got to do this? And D Ford's great, that's fine, and Quan Alexander's okay, but I need this. If you're not satisfied with what they've done, what's missing for you? 888-957-9570 is the phone number. The text line is 95795. Mr. Urban, where are you on the Niners offseason?
Look, as a fan, what you want to see from your front office, your management team in the offseason, is you want to feel like they see what you're seeing. The problems you perceive your team having, you want to see the leadership of that team acknowledging that, yes, that is a problem. And then from there, are they addressing it to the best of their abilities? Now, what does to the best of their abilities mean? You know, that's relative. But when I look at what the Niners have done thus far, they had a lot of glaring needs. They have directly addressed four of them with the signings and trades that we've seen in the past week. And the ones that they haven't been able to directly address, we have at the least been told that they tried. They were in on this. They were in on that. And that was going to address that obvious need that we have. We get it, guys. That's a need. At least they took a crack at it. It looks to me like they had a plan, they were organized, they were on the same page, and much like I would think every offseason for every team, you're going to get some guys you want to get, and you're going to miss on some guys. I think they missed on a couple.
What do you think they missed on the most? Because I have a very specific, I should say, I think there's a right answer to this.
Number one wideout.
And I think that's the answer most people are going to give, and I think it's the wrong answer.
I'm sorry, not number one, a red zone go-to guy, because that's where they struggle.
So first of all, the last thing you said is a fact. They struggled in the red zone. They could use a red zone target. But for me, that is not the number one thing. that they missed.
All right, what you got?
For me, it's something that a 510 texter just sent in. For the Niners, I was hoping for a top-tier safety. It didn't happen. Two things. One, agreed. They were there for the taking, and the Niners chose not to take. Two, Trey Boston is still out there, and I assume his price drops with every day he remains a free agent, and he is pretty universally considered a high-value signing, a guy who's better than his salary numbers will indicate. And if I was the Niners, staring at a starting safety tandem of Jimmy Ward and Jaquaski Tartt, I would have signed Trey Boston a year ago.
So why do you think they didn't?
I don't know. It's the one question I don't even have a theoretical answer to. Everything else they've done, I can give you a defense of. Even if I don't necessarily believe it, if I don't love it, I understand it on some level. I do not understand how the only person they signed to play in their defensive backfield who is not currently hurt is Jimmy Ward. That, to me, does not get it done. And I don't have an answer. I don't have an explanation of how that was the choice. Let's go to Matt in San Rafael with some Niner offseason ideas. You want to weigh in? 888-957-9570 is the phone number. Are you happy with free agency? And if not, what's missing? What's up, Matt?
Well, Matt, good to hear you anytime on the station. I like your work. It remains to be seen. I think they've signed a lot of players that could make a difference. There are a lot of question marks, and that is evidenced by the way they structured the contracts. I think they give themselves outs. Your Trey Boston take, I think, is interesting because I'm not a big Trey Boston take.
Right.
Sorry, not Austin.
Mm-hmm.
I thought they should have gone after Adrian Amos, who the Packers signed for much less than I thought he was going to go for. I didn't want him to go in on Thomas because I thought he was too expensive. But you're right. I think they need a safety. But I think what their plan is I think they're going to go Bosa with the two or trade back. I don't think they're going to trade back. But assuming they do, I think the second-round pick, I think they're going to go with a free safety. There are four good free safeties in the draft that I think, two or more might be available there. I think that's where they're looking. And I think they like Jimmy Ward a lot more than most people do.
Obviously.
That's the kind of buzz that I've gotten.
Yeah.
But,
Dirk Burton.
You know, they have other holes that I think haven't been discussed a lot. Of course, people have talked about they need another guard, a backup guard. They need a Sam linebacker. If you're talking about the two guys they've gotten, Nzocha and Malcolm Smith, I don't think either of those guys is who I want playing the Sam linebacker this year. And then they need another corner unless they're going to hopefully rotate this quiver of guys that haven't been able to perform consistently in the last couple of years through. They've made moves. And I think that the number one receiver is not the issue that they need. I think if they can get weapons, and I think McKinnon and if Pettis develops, you're not going to see Kittle getting doubled or bracketed the way he has been, and I think he can be that red zone target.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. It's not that I don't understand why people want a big wide receiver, a red zone target, even a number one. Like, look, now that Beckham and Brown have been traded, a lot of people are talking about Julio Jones and A.J. Green. I understand why you want those guys. They'd make your team better. I'm not telling you not to go get them if you can. But to me, what Matt just said, McKinnon's a weapon. Coleman's a weapon. Pettis is hopefully an evolving weapon. Kittle has the potential to be the best tight end in football. There are weapons, and maybe even more than that, and this is one of the things I kind of like about this offseason. Kyle Shanahan is a weapon. If Kyle Shanahan's not a weapon, you don't want him as your coach.
Right.
He's only a good candidate for a head football coaching position because he is an offensive weapon. And in a way, by not signing the number one wide receiver, by signing another under-the-radar guy offensively, and by having a collection of sort of bizarre, not untalented, but a not entirely star-studded set of weapons, but it's a long list. Kittle, Breida, McKinnon, Coleman, Pettis, Goodwin. Throw in Trent Taylor if you want to. Jordan Matthews, right? It's a long list of different options. And if Kyle Shanahan can't turn that into an offense that can score from the red zone, then maybe he's not the head coach wunderkind we thought he was. And maybe it is time to... So in a way, by spending big money on defense and not offense, the Niners, it's almost like the equivalent of, you know, when an NFL player or an NBA player signs a one-year contract and people say they're betting on themselves? In a way, they're betting on Kyle Shanahan here. And I'm okay with that because I kind of want to see how he does. And if he fails, then maybe it's time to move on from Kyle Shanahan altogether. And I'm not sure giving him the crutch of a superstar wide receiver helps you find out how good your head coach is. Now, giving him a good defense does. Giving him a diversity of options and the options he wants, which I think describes McKinnon and Coleman, as well as Jordan Matthews and Dante Pettis, for that matter. These are the weapons Kyle Shanahan has chosen. And now he gets to go to battle with them. And I kind of like that in terms of let's see what he's got. On the defensive side, though, you've made a lot of changes to help so that we can see more of what he's got on offense. And I'm in favor of that. That's why, for me, it all comes back to safety. Because I just can't look at a defensive backfield where the only healthy veteran is Richard Sherman and feel confident about it. I can't. Not after what I saw last year. Maybe Akello Witherspoon bounces back. Maybe Tavarus Moore is a starting corner. Maybe Tart and Ward turns into a good safety tandem. But counting on that? No. I can't count on that. Let's go to Matt, another Matt, in San Fran. He said that, not me. Who wrote San Fran? San Fran.
Hi, Matt.
You're better off saying Frisco, for God's sakes. Go ahead, Matt.
I'm kind of satisfied with what the Niners are trying to do with John Lynch. I mean, he's focused on the defense and the free agent. I mean, then you get Bosa. The key thing is that the Niners want that. They just a big issue that every NFC need when you're playing against these high powerful offenses. You got to get to the quarterback. If you can get to the quarterback, you got Richie Sherman. He can lock down his side. If Jason Verrett could come back and be the stud that he's, Jason Verrett is a beast.
He's
been injured.
That's true. He's just
you know
hurt.
What I mean? And then you don't really, I mean, the safety, Culver played real good his first year and tried to show athleticism. The key thing for the Niners is that on defense, they got to stay healthy. If they can stay healthy and you get to the quarterback, it makes everybody from the back to the middle to the back end could play better. You know what I mean? You got to get the quarterback. And on the offensive side, I think they could try to add a Crabtree to bring him back. He's a red zone target too. You know what I mean? If they could get a Crabtree in there, I think that'd help the offense. But if Garoppolo stay healthy, the Niners, like I said, the big thing is they got to stay healthy. This team can win. They can win the wild card for sure. You know what I mean? So that's I'm happy with their Niners direction that they're headed, and they got some good key players on defense. That's my take.
That makes a lot of sense.
Thanks for the call, Matt.
A couple of good Matts right there. I like a couple good Matts on the phone lines. Great job, great name.
I feel inundated with Matts.
Hey.
I feel overwhelmed.
It can be a lot. Obviously, as you just heard, we're intelligent, well-spoken individuals, all of us. And I have very little to dispute in what Matt just said. But I think one of the interesting things about this team is the best-case scenario and the worst-case scenario are very far apart. Because I'm with him. If you get good Garoppolo and these weapons that they've signed that Kyle Shanahan has specifically said, I want that guy, they turn out to be threats, and Kwon is healthy and plays, and Jason Verrett is healthy, then you have really good cornerbacks, and maybe it covers up some of the safety weakness. If Dee Ford has another double-digit sack season alongside DeForest Buckner, you can... It's not that hard to paint a picture where the Niners go 9-7 or even 10-6 and at least threaten, if not take, a wild card position. It's also not that hard to see the path to 4-12.
Right, exactly.
Let me ask you. That's the problem with this team.
Let's rewind.
Oh, quickly, before you ask me anything, let me tell you that you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1, KGMZ San Francisco, a radio.com sports station. Back to you.
So the Niners announced that they have a new head coach. They have a new general manager now. 3 years ago.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.